This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This from Terry to open up the show today. Terry writes, Kevin, getting to the playoffs is amazing for the first year of a new regime. But getting to a Super Bowl usually means you have to win your division. I'm concerned that the Eagles are more talented, almost as young, and will be tough to catch for the next few years. I'm happy with being a good team, but winning the Super Bowl is the prize, and winning three road games to get there is a tough ask. Good morning, everybody. Already looking ahead is Terry. The Nats won the draft lottery. Denton texted me that last night. They'll pick number one for the third time in franchise history. It won't happen until mid-July of next year, but Mark Zuckerman's going to jump on with us at 11:35 to tell us who the next Steven Strasburg or Bryce Harper will be. Mitch Tischler will be with us at 11 a.m. to talk about the home stretch, the final four games to the playoffs. Even though the playoff spot they earn, more likely than not, will be a wild card berth, which Terry is very concerned about, not just for this year, but moving forward. I haven't given a lot of thought, really, to beyond what we're witnessing right now, other than the thought that it's going to be kind of cool that Washington and Philadelphia appear to be, and the NFL changes, we understand this, okay, can change on, you know, one injury can completely alter a franchise, knock on wood, as I say that. But right now, given where both teams seem to be positioned, it looks like for the next few years, they're going to battle it out for the division. You know, finally, Washington's going to be in that mix of teams that when we're talking during the offseason and we're talking over the summer and we're starting to do predictions for the upcoming season and you're reading other people's predictions, you're not seeing them as a top five next year's draft selection in terms of the order. You know, you're seeing them, you know, division winner, wild card, you know, 10 wins, 11 wins, 12 wins. You know, get ready for that, because when you have a team in its first year with a rookie quarterback that performs at a much higher than expected level, the optimism for that franchise moving forward goes through the roof. You know, it doesn't happen if you don't have the quarterback. But when you have the quarterback, at least the perception that you have the quarterback, get ready for lofty praise during the offseason. You know, much more consternation over what they're doing in free agency, what they're doing in the draft, how they're enhancing the roster rather than building it from scratch. What they're doing to support this young star quarterback who made a Pro Bowl in his first season, because that is likely to happen. You know, he's the number one vote getter in the NFC in terms of the fan vote. And I don't think players and coaches are going to knock him down that far, not in the NFC. If you were in the AFC, it would be tough. It would be tougher. But I would think that Goff and Daniels have a pretty good shot to be named Pro Bowl NFC quarterbacks. Yeah, get ready for that. So, Terry, look, first of all, you are right. It is hard to win a Super Bowl from a wild card position. It's been done. Most recently, the 2020 Buccaneers won 3 road games with Tom Brady at quarterback and advanced to the Super Bowl, beat the Chiefs in the COVID season. The 2007 Giants famously won 3 road games and shocked the Patriots, the 07 Patriots, in the Super Bowl. The 2005 Steelers did it. The 2010 Packers did it. You know, these are the 4 examples in the era of at least 6 playoff teams per conference of the teams in the 5, 6, or 7 spot to win it all. However, just so you know, no 7 seed, and we've only had the 7 seed for a few years, no 7 seed has ever gotten to the Super Bowl or won the Super Bowl. And very few overall 6 and 5 seeds have ever won it. I just gave you the list of the 5 and 6 seeds that have won it. So, yes, from the wild card spot, it's possible. You know, you think back to those years, those teams kind of got on a roll, and you know, they also in three of the 4 cases, they had the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, and Tom Brady. Now, the Giants had Eli Manning. I wouldn't put him in that same category, but they were okay at quarterback, and they just got on a roll, and they got it done amazingly. But it's harder, yes. And to your overarching kind of point that you're concerned that the Eagles are more talented, almost as young. In fact, they are actually a younger roster. I had to look this up. I wasn't sure. The Eagles have the 7th youngest roster in the NFL right now. Washington's roster is actually the 8th oldest in the NFL. Now, you know, there are a couple of long-in-the-tooth players, Bobby Wagner, Tressway, come to mind. But it doesn't matter. The overall average age of Washington's roster is the 8th oldest. The Eagles have the 7th youngest roster in the NFL. And I would agree with you. And we've kind of seen that play out this year, right? Because certainly if we go back 2 months, if we go back to mid-October, even late October, what are we talking about? Washington was right there. You know, they, for a few weeks, Denton, they were actually favored to win the division. You know, there was that few week period when, you know, they were destroying people like Cleveland and, you know, the Panthers, etc., where they actually, and they had the lead in the division when they were 4-1. Then they got to 7-2 and they were still in the lead in the division as the Eagles were gaining ground, no doubt. But, you know, the Eagles over the course of the season have proven to be a better football team. You know, still have to go play the games. They got one coming up on the 22nd, a week from Sunday at home. It probably won't get Washington into position to win the division, although it's possible if Philadelphia loses this weekend to Pittsburgh and Washington goes to New Orleans and wins, you're talking about then, you know, the next game being Washington at 9-5, Philadelphia at 11-3 with a chance to get to within a game with 2 to go at that point. Now, Philadelphia's last 2 games are the Cowboys and Giants at home. So keep that in mind. And while I don't think they clinch, I don't think they clinch with a win against Pittsburgh, right? Do they? Look at playoff clinching scenarios for this week, Denton. They're out there somewhere. Philly probably clinches a playoff spot with a win over Pittsburgh, but I don't think they clinch the division. Although a Philly win and a Washington loss would clinch the division. I mean, I don't even need to get into tiebreakers at that point because they'd have 12. Washington could only get to 11 at that point. So a win and a Washington loss, Philadelphia clinches the division. But I don't think they clinch the division with a win and a Washington win.
No, they do not. They need Washington to lose to clinch.
Right.
Or tie.
Or tie, right, exactly. Because if they had 12 and Washington was still left with 8, even if it was 8-5-1, they couldn't get to 12. So there's that. But I think every year is a new year. And the way I would view kind of the future, and I don't even know why we're having this conversation, other than it did get me to thinking about, you know, in the era of the 5, 6, and 7 seed, or even in the era of the 2 wild cards, when 3 played 6 and 4 played 5 in the first round. You know, 3 was a division winner, 4 was a division winner, but 5 and 6 were the wild cards. It's just, it's rare, but it can happen. Yes, your best path to getting to a Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl is by winning your division and having the chance to play the most possible games at home. By far and away, the number one seed is produced, I think, obviously, the most Super Bowl winners. 53% of the Super Bowl winners were one seeds. 20.4% of Super Bowl winners were two seeds. Believe it or not, there was only one 3 seed to win a Super Bowl. Until last year, excuse me. The Chiefs were a 3 seed last year. They were the second 3 seed to win a Super Bowl after the 87 Skins with Doug Williams. Up until last year, they were the only 3 seed to win a Super Bowl. And then the percentages actually grow for 4 seeds at 14%, and then 5, 6, 4%, 7, the 7 seed is 0%. It's never happened. And, you know, in some ways, 5, 6, and 7 now all have to win 3 road games. It's possible 5 could host 6 in an NFC title game, or, you know, 5 could host 7, or 6 could host 7 in an NFC title game. So you could, as a wild card team, end up playing a home game, but it wouldn't be until the championship game. Philadelphia, by the way, set up very nicely with draft picks. They have a ton of draft picks like Washington does for the next few years. Their cap position isn't as attractive as Washington's. Washington right now going into 2025, projected per spot rack, has the 4th most salary cap space, and Philly's down the list. Philly's at 18th. Right now, you know, they're not at the bottom, but they're right around the middle of the league in terms of salary cap space. But I would look at the two franchises as the best in the division right now, the best setup roster wise, the best setup from a draft choice standpoint, and clearly the best right now equipped from a quarterback standpoint. And I think Washington would be number one in the division on that list. In terms of who's got the best quarterback. Right now, I would take Jaden Daniels over Jalen Hurts. I would take Jaden Daniels over Dak Prescott when he comes back. I would. The Giants will have a chance to take their young quarterback, perhaps at number one or number two in the draft next April. But who knows? They could turn it around with a new coach, just like Washington did, if they get that position right. Because the Giants, actually, when you look at their roster, outside of quarterback primarily, it isn't the worst. They were pretty talented on defense in spots this year. Their offensive line they've invested in. Of course, they've had major health issues with their offensive line, but Andrew Thomas is a pretty good left tackle. Of course, giving up on Barkley is an indication that the franchise isn't particularly well run, but I would expect a cleaning of the house by the Mara family. With the Giants in the offseason, new GM, new head coach, new quarterback, they're essentially going to be in the same spot Washington is in, heading into 2025. And the Giants, by the way, have near top 10 salary cap space as well. So, you know, we saw what happened here. You know, you hire a new GM, you hire a new head coach, you draft a quarterback in the top 2, and it can turn around in a hurry. And the Giants' roster actually isn't that much different than Washington's was this time last year. They've got a potential star. Not potential. I would say Malik Nabers with a real quarterback is going to be a star wide receiver. You know, they can hit on the quarterback. Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, whomever it is, could turn it around in a hurry. It's really hard. We talk about this and have forever, all the time and forever. The NFL, the only thing that, the only predictor of sustained success is quarterback play. It's the only thing that you can hang your hat on and say, we have a chance to be good for several years in a row. Doesn't mean that it'll happen every year, but more often than not, if you have the quarterback, if you have that elite quarterback, you're going to be competitive. You're going to be a playoff contender year in and year out. And that's what you can say about Washington. Philadelphia is better in the trenches. They're better on defense, more talented on defense. Howie Roseman is an excellent general manager. I know everybody thinks somehow Adam Peters duped him twice. Look at the way Cooper DeJean's playing. All due respect for that trade-up that they made with Washington. Yeah, Washington perhaps got him back with the Jahan Dotson deal. We'll see. Time will tell on that one. I feel good about that one at this point. I do. But yeah, the Eagles and Washington with the Giants, really, if they hit on the quarterback, could be right there. They could. But let's just enjoy this right now. The division did get away pretty quickly. It got away from them pretty quickly. You know, there was a moment, and it wasn't that long ago, a month and a half, 2 months ago, where it really looked like Washington could be on the way to one of these dream seasons, 11, 12, 13 wins, a division title, and maybe a 2 seed behind Detroit. There was a moment we were thinking that. Philly had something to say about that. 9 straight wins. I still, you know, when Denton and I ranked our NFC contenders on yesterday's show, which we did, I got a lot of feedback from that, and I started to aggregate it before the show. But the net of it is that many more of you agreed with Denton than agreed with me, which is fine. I mean, I think it's close. Denton had Washington as the fourth NFC team in terms of ranking contenders, you know, first through whatever number you want to get to. He had Washington fourth behind Detroit, Philly, and you had Minnesota, right, third. I think you did.
Yes, it was Minnesota.
I had Detroit, Philly, Green Bay, Minnesota, and then Seattle, and had Washington sixth. Yeah, you know, okay, whatever. Look, one game is, in the NFL, it really is its own entity, man. This individual games on Sunday, and even when you get to the postseason, it's a couple of plays here and there when you get to the level that we're talking about. Couple of plays. And I am certainly confident that number 5 and the offense could make the difference in a game against maybe a perceived better opponent on the road. Can they do it 3 straight weeks? That's hard. I'm going to enjoy the first one when we get there. I'm going to enjoy the moment they clinch. Which, by the way, just as an aside, you know, the Thursday night game tomorrow night, you know, in terms of rooting interest for the upcoming games this weekend, it starts with Thursday night. I think we're rooting for the 49ers to beat the Rams. We don't want any legitimate fear of missing out. You know, if the Rams lose and Washington wins, Washington's got a 2-game lead over anybody for the 7th spot with 3 to go. That would be a really good position. Not to mention, that they're just in great shape from a tiebreaker standpoint, with the exception of the Buccaneers. And we'll see with the Falcons when they play them. But they could get themselves into a position to clinch a wild card spot as early as the Philadelphia game on the 22nd. And perhaps, and I think that the odds are actually good, that they could clinch a playoff spot before the season finale against the Cowboys. Now, they could still be playing for seeding at that point. And Green Bay's game this week, Sunday Night Football, what a good one this one is. Packers and Seahawks. We're going to see two teams that I have ranked ahead of Washington on my NFC contender list. Green Bay's a 3-point favorite on the road in Seattle Sunday night. This would be a big win for Washington if Seattle could get it done. If the other Washington could get it done, Seattle on Sunday night, that would be big because Seattle would, you know, strengthen. If you get a Rams loss and a Seattle win, now Seattle's on its way clearly to winning the division. It would have a two-game lead over everybody in that division. And the Packers and Washington could literally be tied late Sunday night with Washington holding the tiebreaker advantage because of better conference record. And Washington could be in the sixth spot late Sunday night. And why does that matter? I don't know. Like I said, each one of these games is its own entity. But it means that you don't have to go to Detroit or Philadelphia if you're the sixth seed. And that would be, I think, a more advantageous route to getting to the next round. Terry, thank you for that. And I was curious that how many teams really made big runs. The list is actually longer than you think, right? I mean, Brady did it. It's Brady and the 2020 Bucks. And remember, kind of like a little bit like the Eagles this year in that they struggled early. Now, the Eagles weren't a completely different team like the Buccaneers were in 2020. But remember, that COVID 2020 Buccaneer team, you know, really kind of, you know, got it going late in the season. They had lost, I think they were 6-6 or 7-5 at some point. And then they started rolling at the end of that season into the postseason. And remember, they came here first. A lot of you still like to say Tampa's toughest game on their way to the Super Bowl that year was here against Taylor Heinicke in Washington. It wasn't. But Washington gave a great fight, and Taylor played great in that game, no doubt. But they had a really close and tough fight in New Orleans and then in Green Bay in the NFC title game when Green Bay kicked that field goal late. Remember that? Instead of trying to score. And then they destroyed Kansas City, but they really figured it out as they got to December. You know, they had finally started to figure it out. All right. We got a lot to get to on this show today, and we will start doing that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So Caitlin Clark was named the 2024 Athlete of the Year by Time Magazine. To be honest with you, I didn't even know that they did. I know that there's always been a Time Person of the Year, or Time Man of the Year, or Time Woman of the Year. I didn't realize that there was a Time Athlete of the Year, but now I do. And Caitlin Clark was named the Athlete of the Year in 2024. Seems perfectly reasonable to me. I'm not sure anybody moved the needle and anybody was more of a discussion point for more people than Caitlin Clark was during 2024, you know, starting with the incredible season that she had at Iowa, the big games in the NCAA tournament that Iowa played, including the championship loss to South Carolina, and then the beginning of her WNBA career. In the Time Magazine issue, there was an interview with Caitlin Clark, and they asked her about being left off the 2024 Summer Women's Olympic team, which became a very controversial decision and a very discussed decision by a lot of people. And yours truly on this show said it was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. It was an opportunity to give women's basketball an unbelievable level of exposure. But more importantly, it would have been a wild, off the charts revenue generator. Imagine the millions and millions of dollars raised for the Olympic team, for women's Olympics, for the women's Olympic basketball team, however that money would and wherever it would have landed, with just being able to sell Caitlin Clark's Olympic jersey. I thought it was silly. And had mentioned at the time that, you know, previous rookies had been selected, you know, previous number one overall picks had been selected to the Olympic team without, you know, the statistics necessarily that would put him there. I forget the list, but I think Brianna Stewart and Diana Taurasi were among those. But anyway, Clark gave an interview and she said that, quote, during the stretch, she did believe that there was a chance that she was going to be named to the Olympic team. And she wanted to be named to the Olympic team. But she became aware that the USA basketball committee was going to move away from her during a game or after a game that Indiana, the Fever, her team, had won, but had, you know, won to improve their record to 3-9. And she says, quote, "During that stretch, I gave them a lot of reasons to keep me off the team with my play." Close quote. She averaged during that stretch 16.8 points per game, 6.3 assists per game, and was shooting 37.3% from the field, but was also committing like close to 6 turnovers per game. And the selection committee decided to prioritize veteran players with more international experience. And Clark said that she understood that it would have been hard to remove any of the established players to include her. And she said that she didn't want to be added simply as a means for increasing viewership for the Olympic Games, which I would have, you know, if the adults had been in charge, I believe they wouldn't have let her feelings about that matter much, because it would have been for the betterment of the game, the betterment of the team, and it would have been, as they say, business. It would have been pure business. Like, are you kidding me? We're going to pass on this level of revenue? I had Christine Brennan, remember, on the show a day or two after she was omitted from the team. Christine Brennan's covered women's sports, covered the Olympics about as much as anybody has in the history of the games, from a female reporter and columnist standpoint. And she said it was the stupidest decision she had ever seen in all of her years of covering basketball. But anyway, you know, despite the fact that, you know, her being the number one pick and playing, you know, a lot of minutes and playing well at times, even though the numbers weren't great, and the fact that previous number one picks had made the Olympic team as rookies, they left her off the team. She said that there was a moment after she came to Washington, or I don't know if it was in Washington, it could have been in Indianapolis, but she had 30 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists in a win over the Mystics. And she texted her agent, hoping that that particular game would get her in the good graces of the committee. So there was, you know, even after she found out, she was hoping that that one game might change their minds. So she did want it. You know, there was some discussion at the time that she wanted the break. She had been playing basketball for, you know, right through the NCAA tournament, which bled right into the beginning almost of the WNBA season, and that she welcomed the break. No. It's apparent that she still had hoped to have been a part of the team. She did say the following. She said that she was disappointed, but she didn't want her celebrity alone, as mentioned, to kind of merit the invitation. And that was the part that upset her. She said, quote, "That whole narrative kind of upset me, because that is not fair. It's disrespectful to the people that were on the team that had earned it and were really good. And it's also disrespectful to myself," closed quote. She did say that making the 2028 Olympic team 4 years from now is, quote, "a huge, huge goal," close quote. And I would say that the odds are pretty high of her being on that 2028 Olympic team. Look, you know, almost, I don't have the exact timing on this, but almost, you know, within days, maybe a week or two after the Olympic team had been named and she wasn't on it, her play improved significantly. Scoring, assists, shooting percentages. I mean, how many records were we reading off virtually every time she played a game, having one of the great rookie seasons in the history of that league? It'd be hard to imagine that 4 years from now, as a veteran player, that she won't be on that Olympic team. I can appreciate everything she said. And of course, I mean, can you imagine if she said, "I really think I deserved to be on the team based on what I would have done for revenue, what I would have done for exposure, attention, etc. She's not going to say that. That's for others to say. And to me, it's always been pretty obvious the mistake that they made. They did win the Olympic gold, right? Didn't they have a close game in the gold medal game? See, I would know, and this is just an example. It's my own example, but I think plenty of people probably share this same thought, and that is, had she been on the team, we'd have a clear-cut memory of how it went over the summer. I don't have a clear-cut memory of how it went because all due respect to the effort and Americans, and they won gold. I'm pretty sure they won gold. I was not as interested without her on the team. But didn't they have a really close game that they barely survived, Denton, either in the semis or the gold medal game?
Yes, they did. I think they might have had two close games because both the men and the women had close games. But I think they won pretty handily.
Well, the men's final was the Steph Curry, one of the moments of his career. I mean, he's had so many. That final against France was spectacular. Did they play the French in the final, too?
I'm looking it up just to double check, but I believe they did.
Yeah. And I think it was a really close game. They had a close call. The other reason, and some people in that sport made the argument that the international game is, you know, relies a lot on, you know, long range and 3-point shooting, and that she would have been a phenomenal specialist to just have on that team. Anyway, it was a good story.
I read it was a one point win against France in the final. Well,
it was a 1-point win over France in the final.
Yeah, 67 yeah, so that to 66.
That's what I was remembering, kind of. All right. Bill Belichick may take the North Carolina job. What do we think of that? We'll get to that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.
Great day for the Nationals yesterday. They win the Major League Baseball lottery. They will pick number one overall in the 2025 MLB draft. Sitting atop most MLB draft boards is Ethan Holliday, the younger brother of Orioles star Jackson Holliday. Ethan is currently an infielder at Stillwater High School in Oklahoma. In the NFL, Joe Burrow had his house burglarized during a Monday Night Football game against the Dallas Cowboys when they were in Dallas. It was reported by a swimsuit model, Olivia Pontoon, who was allegedly house-sitting for Joe Burrow. Must be nice to be Joe Burrow. The Netflix panel was announced for their football on the Christmas. They're gonna have comedians. They got Robert Griffin among others, but in the list of people that are gonna be a part of Netflix's NFL Christmas coverage, comedians Nate Bargatze and Bert Kreischer. Can't wait to hear them talk about timeouts during the middle portion of the games. In college football, a lawmaker in Ohio is planning on making flag planting illegal in this state. State Representative Josh Williams proposed through the OHIO, spelled out the way they do it at Ohio State, the OHIO Sportsmanship Act that would make planting the flag during game day or on a game day a felony in the state. And that's what's trending.
Bill Belichick has been offered, according to many reports, the head coaching job at the University of North Carolina. A lot of people believe, Denton, he may take this gig. So I think there are a lot of interesting things here. We've been hearing this for a couple of days, right? And the news came out over the weekend that there was some interest in Belichick. And they had had perhaps a 3-4-5 hour meeting, the chancellor of UNC and Belichick, about the job vacated, by the way, by the retirement of Mac Brown at whatever age he is. Is Mac Brown older than Bill Belichick or not?
Mac Brown is 1 year older than Belichick.
So I think there are a couple of interesting things here. Number one is he considering a college job because he knows that there isn't going to be an NFL job available? I still find that amazing. Remember, you know, the Atlanta job seemed to be his if he had wanted it, and if Arthur Blank had conceded to some of the control that Belichick wanted, but he didn't, and that thing fell apart. And then that was it. I mean, still kind of shocking in the moment in January earlier this year, you know, where Bill Belichick was on the outside looking in, didn't get a job. I still think it's kind of amazing that Vrabel didn't get a job during the offseason. But anyway, we've had, you know, some success here as a former head coach with Dan Quinn. That's the first thing that I thought of is, man, if he's considering UNC, it must be that there's no opportunity in the NFL that he believes will be there for, you know, maybe it will be there, but not in the way that he wants it. Or maybe it's people have just moved on from Belichick. Maybe it's like he wants too much control. He's kind of a pain in the ass. He's older. Look at what he did without Brady, et cetera, et cetera. Personally, I think Belichick would be phenomenal in New York, phenomenal in Dallas. A lot of the, you know, offerings that would be close to home in terms of our division. I still think Bill Belichick's the greatest coach ever. But is an NFL job actually there? That's number one. Number two is this. Why would you take the North Carolina job? Maybe it's because he's got, you know, this idea of leaving it to his son, Steve. There's been a lot of discussion about Steve Belichick being the successor, the coach in waiting, and this would be the perfect setup. By the way, Chapel Hill is lovely. North Carolina is not a bad state to live in. But in terms of the job itself, North Carolina is a basketball school. We all know that living here. We know what Carolina is. It's a basketball school. You know, they've had a few moments here and there in football, just like NC State, Wake, and Duke, you know, to a lesser extent. North Carolina is a basketball state. It's a college basketball state. That's what the majority care about. It's unique. You know, most every state in this country, it's football one, football two, and then whatever's three, you know, pro football, college football, or college football, pro football, and then count five steps to get to number three. North Carolina is different. People love college basketball. Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina, is it in the state of North Carolina. Trust me, so much more than Duke. Duke's more of a national brand. It's a small school with a lot of Northeastern and Mid-Atlantic kids going to it. And very, very smart kids going to it. Very smart kids go to the University of North Carolina as well. But the University of North Carolina has a lot of in-state kids that go to Chapel Hill. Basketball, one. Football, two. Distant, two. It's old ACC. You know, old ACC is Duke, Wake, State, Carolina, Maryland, UVA. These were, and still are, basketball first schools. Every one of those places has had a moment or two in football. I mean, I love Maryland football. And Maryland football has been a big part of my rooting DNA for a lifetime. And I can tell you everything you need to know about every era when they were good. Jerry Claiborne, Bobby Ross, Ralph Friedgen. You know, three seasons in a row from Lux here recently. They were back being competitive. Just different because of the Big Ten and the Big Ten East and what was really possible, you know, based on their talent level. You know, NC State's had some moments. Carolina's had some moments. You know, Wake actually has had a moment or two in football. UVA's had some moments in football. But these have always been schools in which the majority, the large majority of alum and students care about basketball first. This is a job that's beneath Belichick, isn't it? Like, if he were going to coach in college, why not coach in the Big Ten or the SEC? Why do you want to coach at a basketball first school in the ACC?
I mean, great weather. Maybe his 24-year-old girlfriend wants a master's degree from UNC. Maybe a PhD.
She's only 24 for real.
Yeah, there's a 48-year age gap between them.
Hey, man, for those people that say, how is he going to recruit? Well, just point to that 24-year-old.
Yeah, he's in with the youth.
He landed that.
I don't think he'll have problems there. I mean, I do look at UNC. UNC has always been kind of this sleeping giant in the ACC. Because they're such a great basketball school, you can easily parlay that into football success and just make you a powerhouse of all things athletics if you had the right guy to lead it. I was stunned that Mack Brown could never really do it. He had the quarterbacks.
Yeah, Denton, you can have moments, but you're not going to be Clemson. Clemson's always been football first, football spring football second. I mean, probably baseball third at Clemson.
But Clemson has only been the Clemson that we know now for about a decade.
Remember, no, they had moments. They won a national championship in 1981. They were powerful at times. Always, you know, highly ranked, or, you know, they had some years there. You're right. They had some years there. I mean, Maryland Frieden owned them for a few years, even when he was an underdog. But Clemson won a national championship in 81. North Carolina's never sniffed a national championship in football.
Yeah, but now it's so much easier to do it.
It's true.
Easier to do that now.
It's easier because it's easier to make the playoff.
It's easier to get into the position to where you can do that now. Whereas, you know, when Clemson won in 81, you had like six national champions based on publications and stuff like that. So I think that I've always been a proponent of there's a pendulum swing in college football, and all it takes is getting the right guy. Like Florida State's a great example of this. They were just about like almost irrelevant, and then Bobby Bowden comes in there and he swings that pendulum to make us now in 2024, even though they had a rough season this year, view them as a football school. I don't know that Bill's going to be around for 10 to 15 years, and truthfully, I have no idea what his son is like as a coach, but if you get that right guy, you can very easily swing yourself to be both a basketball and a football school. Alabama's doing it.
Yeah, the SEC has so much money right now, and it's poured into basketball a little bit here in recent years with the large collectives, and they're just raking in talent. I mean, the SEC is now the best in both sports, pretty much. I'm looking through just the list of, and I know, I hear you, it's 12 teams, and the opportunity now is much greater than it was previously. But as you go through the list of national champions in college football, not one basketball first school I can find going back to the 60s. Not one. Michigan, Georgia, Bama, LSU, Clemson, Bama, Ohio State, Florida State, Auburn, LSU, Florida. You know, Florida, remember, during that stretch, they were also contending for and won a national championship in basketball. You know, Florida's done it. Ohio State's had very good basketball. Oklahoma has had really good both. But you would never get anybody to admit that basketball even sniffs the importance of football. They would trade a national championship in football for, you know, a first-round exit in the NCAA tournament in basketball. I mean, it's amazing going through this list. There's not one basketball first school here. I mean, I can't even find something that I would consider close, and I'm into the 60s now.
But as long as you're getting
different
to the playoff, you're getting a significant chunk
different
of money, especially with 12 teams now.
It still doesn't change this. Your point's a good one. The opportunity is different now. But it doesn't change the fact that North Carolina is nowhere near an elite football job. So if he's going to go college, why not coach in the SEC, where you'll have the largest salary cap number? As you know, Andrew Brandt, who was on with us yesterday, and I'd urge you to go listen to that. If you haven't heard that, you can download the Odyssey app and listen to it. We were talking about essentially what college sports will look like moving forward with, you know, this case that will settle. It will create essentially a 22% of program revenue salary cap. You know, up to $22 million to spend on players, 75% of it going to football. I mean, just, so I would think that there would have been better opportunities. Look, Chapel Hill is really nice. The school is pleasant. There's a lot about that research triangle area that is incredible from a lifestyle standpoint, quality of life standpoint. And maybe that's what he's looking for at his age. And by the way, this opportunity, this path to leaving it for his son to coach. And, you know, a place like North Carolina would be willing to do that, whereas, you know, Florida wouldn't. I'm trying to think of the SEC openings, and actually Florida's probably
not going to be open. I don't know how many SECs. I mean, Arkansas might end up being open, and then you're competing with John Calipari. Those press conferences would be fun. But how much do you think the funding expands with Belichick? Because I sent you the estimated funding for 2025 on NIL. This is from NILNCAA.com. And right now UNC is 28th. And you look at a lot of these schools, like Clemson is the first ACC school at $15 million estimate funding coming in 2015. I would imagine that that number grows substantially for UNC if you have Bill Belichick attached to your program. Because with all due respect to Mack Brown, you know, he's one of the great college football coaches of a generation. His name doesn't carry nearly as much weight as Bill Belichick does.
What you sent me, Denton sent me the NIL numbers, the collective numbers. So the amount that each school has had to spend on players, essentially. By the way, out of the Power Four leagues, Maryland's 52 out of 53. Only Rutgers raises less.
No, they're 52 out of the country. There's two group of five teams ahead of them with San Diego State and UConn. Although UConn is so heavy basketball, that number makes sense. San Diego State being ahead of Maryland was stunning.
So in the ACC projected for this year, Clemson, Virginia, Florida State, Louisville, North Carolina. So Carolina was fifth on that list, just barely ahead of Georgia Tech. Clemson football school, Virginia not so much, but Virginia's just got a lot of wealthy donors. Florida State football, Louisville. God, Louisville, actually, you know, you mentioned Arkansas. Arkansas is one of those real interesting places. And I'll just tell you, I actually spent a lot of time in a previous professional life in Bentonville, Arkansas, home of Walmart. Walmart was a client of mine. And I used to go, I would go to Bentonville 3-4 times a year for about 3 years. It's fine. Spent some time in Little Rock, too. That's one of those interesting schools in which both are really important to the fan base. Basketball's a big deal. Bud Walton Arena is phenomenal. They won a national championship with Nolan Richardson. Before that, you go back to the 70s, they were in a Final Four with the famous triplets. Sidney Moncrief, Marvin Delph, and Ron Brewer, I think, was the third. Help me with that one, G.
You ever seen them call the Hogs during basketball games? Even on television. I've never been there for a basketball game, but on television, it's the most it's so college, but it's like the most absurd thing ever. That's why they got Cal. You got that Walmart money, you got the Tyson money.
Yeah, you the Tyson foods and Walmart money right there, and that's, you know, and no pro team, you know? It's everything. Arkansas football and Arkansas basketball. By the way, one of the best crowds of the year. I know we're moving in a different direction here. Belichick to North Carolina, I don't know. Whatever. It has to mean that there's not an NFL job for him, I think. Or maybe it's just a lifestyle, quality of life thing he's going for. One of the best crowds of the year, Denton, in college football was that crowd at Arkansas for Texas. That place before that game and as that game kicked off, that was a real, I mean, a true bloodthirsty rivalry, renewed because they hadn't played in a while, game. And it was a great football game, too. Sam Pittman, he's not going to make it, you don't think?
I don't think so. I think eventually they're going to have to move on.
He's not done a bad job.
No, but I think he's hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
And today, like, you saw Vanderbilt make a big jump this year. If you're Arkansas, you're looking like, all right, we need to be that next school making a big jump. I mean, Vanderbilt doesn't even – their stadium's under construction, and they're still winning games. How do we get to that point?
All right. We'll talk some Skins, talk some Commanders with Mitch Tischler next.